Brocon Show with Anna DeBlantis on 720 WGN. Bob Baer is joining us, one of the most decorated clandestine agents of the CIA in that esteemed agency's history. And Bob, a couple of different things that have popped up here that sort of elude me here. First of all, I obviously spent a lot of time in the Middle East as, you know, in your service to this country. Do you think that, well, your thoughts on the Taliban coming to Camp David potentially to sign a peace agreement?
Well, you know, politically, it's utterly stupid. I mean, you know, these people did host Al-Qaeda when they hit the World Trade Center. And there's a lot of raw memories. Also, you know, who are we really dealing with? What are their goals? The possibility of their setting up president was very high. I mean, this is not like dealing with the German government or something. So, I mean, it was just crazy. And he apparently did this, was shooting from the hip.
So
it's just nuts. It's nuts. It's never happened before.
When you say setting up the president, are you talking about for potential assassination or politically setting him up? What do you mean?
Well, setting him up, that attack that killed an American. You know, I mean, they have no intention of instituting a ceasefire in the middle of these conversations, which is just crazy. I mean, before you go into it, you have at least on a secret level a ceasefire, saying, oh, we're just going to hold hostilities until we get through this. They didn't even do that, the Taliban. So, I mean, this had no chance of going anywhere. And I don't think the Taliban is a unified command, so they don't have complete control of the.
Right.
That's the other question.
Their
so,
troops.
What does a peace agreement look like in an ideal world? Putting the Taliban in partial control of Afghanistan again, asking them in exchange for withdrawal, we won't allow you to harbor terrorism anymore, and believe that they'll
well,
do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what precisely you want. Is you want to leave and get them and say, listen. No more hosting the Islamic State, Al-Qaeda, anything. Do what you want in your own country. We're not going to nation build. We tried. We failed. But if you use Afghanistan as a launching pad for terrorism, we're going to come back and get you. And it's that simple. So what we do, I mean, look, the president's right. We got to get out there. It's unwinnable.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Are we going to stay there for 50 years?
Right.
I mean, 18.
Well, right. And, I mean, you look at... ours is the most recent chapter in empires trying to pacify or trying to control the playing board in that part of the world. And Afghanistan is a made up concept too, right? I mean, the concept of Afghanistan, the old Hindu Kush, which, you know, you can go back 150 years and you can see the failure of the British trying to figure out what the hell to do there when they basically owned all of South Asia. They couldn't.
They retreated in 1842, wasn't it? They just got them last night. They lost 15,000 people in the retreat. I mean, it's not a place you want to go in and try to reason with these people. They're mostly the Taliban are mostly Pashtuns. I mean, I happen to like the Pashtuns on a personal level, but they're the last people in the world you want to go to war with.
Right.
I think we've talked about this. The last people to defeat them were the Mongols, and it was genocide. So, I mean, obviously, we're not going to do that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Although that did come up at least one time in the last month from the president in terms of, well, you know, I could just drop a bomb there and you know, solve the whole problem, which is not obviously he can't. Right. I mean, he knew what he was saying when he was saying there's like, you know, people that you think want me to do that, which is no, we don't. No, we're good. I think you're right. I mean, he's right to want to get out. I agree with that.
Absolutely.
I agree with the sentiment that our job is about as done as it can be there, because all we're doing there is just being a traffic cop between the Afghani government, which is, you know, very Pakistani dominated, right? And then the Pashtun, and it's just it's a tribal mess. It has always been a tribal mess. And Pakistan.
The whole place is a mess. Let's not forget that Osama bin Laden was taking refuge in a Pakistani military garrison.
Right.
That tells you the whole story.
Right.
We don't even know what the game is.
Yes, exactly. All right. So let's move from that to now this story. Love to get your thoughts on this. There was an extrication of a CIA asset out of the Russian government, a highly placed CIA asset. There apparently was some concern about this asset's safety from the Obama administration. But then, now, according to Jim Sciutto at CNN, he is reporting that there was increased concern after the president had been very open in his discussions with Sergei Kislyak and other Russian officials in the White House and the Oval Office about the FBI and about James Comey.
He violated, you know, this was special access program stuff. It's as secret as you get. And he just spilled the beans in the Oval Office with the foreign minister and the Russian ambassador. So, you know, as soon as that occurred, the CIA said, well, you know, legally he can declassify anything he wants. So why couldn't he declassify the identity of a CIA agent, that's an asset, inside the Kremlin? And that's exactly what their calculations were. Well, we can't. We can't protect this guy with this president. Let's get the guy out.
So let me, in the aftermath of that, and then the other piece, too, that they were concerned about was when he met with Putin privately and then took the notes with himself. You know, he wouldn't let the note taker keep the notes, which, you know, is that to me is probably the most chilling thing he's done as president of the United States for me. And I'm
he trusts Putin more than he does his own government.
Right.
I mean, how that came to pass is another story, but that's just a fact if he's going to take the notes. And then go after the FBI in particular as the deep state, or the CIA as the deep state. I mean, he's basically framed the CIA and the FBI as the enemy, the American people.
What happens in a situation like that when you extricate somebody? Obviously, once they've been extricated, it's obvious to the Russians who that person was, who was the asset.
Is it, or is there a way of doing that?
Well, we don't know. I mean, look, the asset's name was thrown around in 2016 running up to the election. And in fact, a couple of newspapers were aware of a source that was reporting on the Kremlin. At that point, the Obama administration, the CIA, decided to leave him in place because nobody had the name or the identity. But that, of course, changed with Trump and his relationship with Russia, which is still very confusing for everybody.
Well, I just want to understand that. The name was in the press in 2016?
No, it was never in the press.
Oh, but there was a highly placed
description.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, there's a highly placed. And the New York Times was going to run the story, and then they were talked out of it. So what we're essentially saying is the CIA trusts the New York Times more than it does the president.
Wow. So they talked him out of it, and they held that person, they held that asset in place after they knew that
they kept him in place. Yeah,
the New York Times knew who it was. All right, so now when that person, in general terms, it's, you know, you got to think for that person wherever they are now, they must think that Putin's going to come after them, right?
Yeah, well, his identity, he's given a new identity. He's resettled in the United States under a law called PL-110, given credit cards, given money to resettle and everything else.
Yeah.
I mean, Putin last month killed a dissident in Berlin. They just out now cold-bloodedly assassinated him. The FSB did. That's the new KGB. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, absolutely it'd come after him. I mean, a couple months ago, they started moving defectors around the United States, fearing that Putin would put assassins in the country and start killing them.
When sources like that go dark, and I imagine there may be others as well, given the situation, how does that impact our ability? I mean, the whole reason they're there is to help us understand what Putin's up to, right? And in this age when we're worried.
There's no way to get this on the internet. You need a source inside the Kremlin. That's the whole point of the CIA. The CIA can't do that anymore. You might as well stop funding it.
And then you wonder, I mean, obviously, if we're doing it, they're doing it. And then you wonder what's going on.
Yeah, they've got sources all over Washington.
Yes.
Yeah, they do. I mean, it's just a given.
They may have a very useful source at the very top before it's all said and done.
Yeah, well, you got to wonder. Remember, Mueller didn't get into counterintelligence questions. There's one thing, not being able to prove conspiracy in hacking the elections. That's one thing. But counterintelligence suspicions are something entirely different. That's not a legal class.
Yeah. All right. Before I let you go, I'm going to take you somewhere else around the world here. I'm watching this with the sense that it's going to become a very, very large story over the next 6 months, what's going on in Hong Kong. There are clearly anti-Chinese government protests in Hong Kong, right? That's what's going on there. Hong Kong wants to remain in the sort of the cultural form it was when when it was a British protectorate, and there was a sort of a sense of democracy and free trade and openness and, you know, freedom of border and all that. China took it over in 1999. They want to continue to make it more like mainland China than Hong Kong, like a free enterprise zone that it was intended to be. There are protests. What is your sense, Bob Baer, former CIA agent, what is your sense of who is helping those dissidents? What foreign actors?
No one is. This is just organic. The Hong Kong, they've had a certain amount of liberty. They don't want to give it up. And now the question is it infecting the rest of China? And that, I don't know the answer to that, but Xi has got to be worried about that. And if one day, one night, he drives the tanks into Hong Kong, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. Because you do wonder, I mean, who benefits from it? I always look at these things as, you know, at least if a foreign government didn't start it, they're interested in it. I'm just wondering who would get the, whose advantage is it to have that trouble? I mean, is it Russia's, is it to Russia's advantage?
No,
is it to our advantage?
Russians wouldn't touch it. It would be to our advantage to undermine Beijing, whether it's the trade wars or whatever. But I just, if there were a finding against the Chinese, it would leak, trust me. Yeah. And it hasn't leaked, so I don't think there is one.
All right. All right, Bob. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate
it. Thank you, Bob.
May we live in interesting times.
Thanks, bye.
Seriously.
Bye.
Kim Gordon has an interesting Northwestern Medicine newsroom, and she is working in it right now. It's coming up at the top of the hour.
Well, did you know there's an Illinois law that says parents can take time off for their kids' school conference? We'll tell you about it coming up.